Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Normally, it's good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. But, Jim, we have to acknowledge the reality of the day. There is not good enough news for conservatives to blow out the two bad martinis we're going to have today, as well as one crazy martini. The best news for Jim today, of course, is that John Forbes Kerry was easily confirmed as Secretary of State last night. So, Jim, you'll have a grand 4 years dealing with that, I'm sure.
Indeed, I will. I can't wait till Teresa and I get to sit down with Bashir and really talk out this whole Syria problem. He's been in such a cranky mood lately.
All right, on to the first bad martini. And just in his inauguration speech last week, that President Obama talked about this economic recovery that's ongoing as if it all the problems have been solved. Well, all the problems have not been solved, as it turns out. The Commerce Department reporting today, at least the initial report for the fourth quarter of the year 2012, usually a pretty robust quarter given Christmas shopping and everything else, negative 0.1%. Just when we were supposed to be thinking we were slowly climbing back out of the ditch, well, turns out that's not the case. Just to give you a little perspective on the significance of this 0.1 decline in the growth of our economy, here's Rick Santelli's takeover on CNBC today.
When you act like Europe, you get growth rates like Europe, and our discussions with economists sounds like we're in Europe.
There you go.
They have the same discussions constantly.
Joe, Rick,
they're always doing the right thing. They're always thinking they know better, and this is the
That's
kind of
Europe.
We have become Europe.
Rick.
We are not Europe.
And so there you go, Jim.
Obviously, what a calm, easygoing day on CNBC, I see.
Right. But, you know, the narrative once again thrown off course here by the fact that this economy is just not responding to the wrong-headed approach at recovery.
A couple things kind of jump out at this. The first is the projections were like 1.5%, meaning that everybody kind of was expecting some not-so-great news. What was surprising was that it was terrible news. It was kind of fascinating to see this response as soon as the numbers came out. One, I think it was Mark Ambinder or somebody had said, look, this is real news. You know, we've kind of had our economy kind of just, you know, this muck of mediocre to lousy news. But this is genuinely hit the fire alarm. People should be shouting on CNBC, you know, news that really should alter the debate in Washington. Because you think about it, we've been talking about gun control, immigration, you know, a bit of debates about spending, but not a real sense of what, you know, like it's easy to forget there are about 22 million people in this country who are either unemployed or working part-time jobs and want to find full-time jobs. And maybe this all of a sudden kind of, you know, jolts Washington and kind of makes them say, hey, wait a minute, this issue that you really thought was solved, that Obama barely addressed in his inaugural address, is not solved in the slightest. And our economy is now really kind of sputtering along. The other thing that was kind of fascinating was the assessment of folks on the left insisting, well, this is the result of austerity. Greg, what austerity? You know, apparently the report said that it's declines in defense spending, but you look at the deficit and the debt, you know, debt to the penny side, we're still spending oodles of money. If anything, you'd think that spending would go up as people are cashing in dividends and trying to take care of stuff before the new tax laws went into effect January 1st. This is really bad news, and it's not unlikely, you know, very, very plausible we could have another lousy quarter ahead, suggesting we might be, yes, back in recession. Here we are 4 years later. The Obama second term kicks off. And we are economy in recession, except we are like $6 trillion in debt, you know, higher. Way to go, America. Way to go.
Exactly. And, of course, the much-needed tax hikes on the rich that came through in the fiscal cliff deal already gobbled up in the Sandy relief bill. So I don't know what happened to the debt relief there, but once again, a straw man argument exposed. But whether or not America will pay attention to that, I don't know. Jim, on to martini number two, which is also, as it normally is, a bad martini. We said yesterday the president's speech on immigration in Las Vegas would probably warrant this slot, and indeed it does on a couple of fronts. First of all, the president giving pretty much his standard speech here that any sort of comprehensive immigration reform needs to continue enhancing our border security. Some people would quibble with whether or not we've made a lot of progress over the past 4 years along the border. Then, of course, there's the pathway to citizenship and, of course, reforming legal immigration. Well, the president talked about how the people who are in this country illegally just really want a shot at the American dream. And I kid you not, here's how the crowd in Las Vegas responded.
USA! USA! USA!
Si se puede. Yes, we can in Spanish. Those looking to enjoy the American dream. And then the president deciding that anyone who's against comprehensive immigration reform, and specifically his brand of it, is essentially guilty of xenophobia.
Sometimes for the discussion to take on a feeling of us versus them. And when that happens, a lot of folks forget that most of us used to be them. I mean, it's really important for us to remember our history. You know, unless you're one of the first Americans, a Native American, you came from someplace else. Somebody brought you.
Yeah, legally, as it turns out. So, Jim,
you beat me to the punch to the line there, Greg. Because I'm observing, you know, Barack Hussein Obama Sr. came here legally on a student visa to go to the University of Hawaii. And all of the Columbuses and Garrities and all the other listeners, you know, unless you're an illegal immigrant and you're listening to this program, at which point, I guess, thanks for listening. Just be careful about – don't be like the kids on CNN who, when they did it, they did a little kind of, you know, roundtable discussion. And they had these group of children, you know, and high school students said, how many of you are here illegally? And a decent number of them raised their hand. And I felt like saying, folks, you're on CNN. Do you think it's not watched over at the immigration services? And I guess maybe the answer is maybe they aren't. Maybe they're really not worried. You know,
nobody else is.
CNN ratings are so bad, they're not all that worried about you know, immigration services saying, "Hey, look, you see that kid? He's raising his hand. Get him." So, if we really want to reach for a good martini, I looked at yesterday's speech and concluded that what it says is that Obama doesn't really want a deal, because it sounds like Rubio and McCain and Flake and the Democrats working with them in the Gang of Eight, they're doing their best. They really think they can get something through that'll get support of both parties. But one of the things you need is to not have Barack Obama jumping in and saying, I got to have it my way or the highway, and it's going to be the Obama bill, and I'm going to get all the credit for it and stuff like that. Because, you know, Republicans will not go along with this if they feel like they're getting suckered by Obama. If President Obama really wanted to get a deal done, this would be the time for some humility. This would be the time for, you know, making some concessions. This would be a time for saying, okay, I'm going to give ground on issue X. You make some concessions on issue Y. Instead, he goes and holds his response to every problem he faces, which is he goes out to a swing state and holds a campaign rally, just the way he responded to Benghazi and everything else. So what we see here is you end up with a guy who wants to demagogue the issue. I don't think he really wants to get this issue done this cycle. I think he thinks that he's got a decent shot of taking back the House in 2014 if he can demonize Republicans enough. And then once he's got a Democratic House, well, then, heck, they can make it, you know, super instant amnesty. And they can actually, you know, start putting a high-speed rail from Mexico to start bringing in additional illegal immigrants who can be granted amnesty on site. So my gut sense is that Obama doesn't really want to deal that badly. And he will happily to watch the negotiations blow up in the coming months.
Yeah, well, that might actually be the best case scenario.
If you really hate the deal, that's the good news. as somebody who thinks, I kind of dread the demagoguery, and I kind of feel like, you know, it would be nice to see a bipartisan bill that actually addressed the issue, then maybe we could actually improve this situation. But I guess if you're a fan of the status quo, then yes, Obama playing politics will be good news, well, sort of. Kinda.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you just don't want the amnesty, there's a lot of different ways to look at this. But proven commitment to the border, I think, is what a lot of people who are skeptical of this plan and, of course, his policy on this are waiting to see. On to the crazy martini now. And, Jim, of course, you and I both remember that after George W. Bush won the Electoral College in the year 2000, even though Al Gore won the popular vote, which Gore reminded us of repeatedly during the protracted fight, Democrats from Hillary Clinton all the way down the line basically said, well, this whole Electoral College thing is just ridiculous. You know, it's antiquated. Why can't the full will of the people decide who our next president is? Well, that, of course, went nowhere. They were just getting rid of some of their frustration. And lo and behold, in 2008, it turns out the Electoral College treated them just fine. And again, in 2012. Sadly, now some Republicans are deciding that the Electoral College needs some tweaking. They don't want to kill it entirely. Instead, they want to kind of go along the lines of what Nebraska and Maine have done and just decide that it won't be a winner-take-all situation in their states. They will apportion electoral votes based on which candidate wins each individual congressional district. Jim, just smacks of desperation here.
Obviously, this is a system that's already in place in Maine and Nebraska, but those have been in place for a long while, and they're, you know, due to the quirky reasons of those quirky people in those quirky states. This just screams of political maneuvering. If you wanted to make a principled argument of why it is better to allocate your electoral votes by proportion of who wins each congressional district. Yeah, you could do that. I think probably, you know, when you only do this in swing states that Republicans lost, well, then, gee, people think that, you know, you're kind of doing this for a particular reason. And, oh, by the way, as I think it was Sean Trend wrote a great article on this link over at Real Clear Politics. Look, it wasn't that long ago that Arkansas was considered a really Democratic state. And New Jersey was a swing state. And West Virginia was a very Democratic state. Virginia was a reliable Republican state. So states shift. And so if you end up doing this based on the 2012 or 2008 electoral election results, you know, within 4 to 8 to 12 years, all of a sudden, this, you know, populations may shift, and all of a sudden you may end up with the doing worse under the same rule. So I don't think you should do these things for political advantage. If somebody wants to make a principled argument that it is better, fairer, more, you know, constitutionally accurate, or how, you know, if you want to make the case on why it's better for the state, not why it's better for the party. And it looks like most of these initiatives are going nowhere. And I think it just looks, as you said, desperate and craven, and, you know, it's all being done legally, but, you know, every state has the right to change these rules. But it definitely gives off a whiff of trying to cheat or trying to change the rules because we can't win under the existing rules. And I'm one of those, you know, naive optimists on our no good martini day to believe that Republicans can still win under the existing rules of the Electoral College, and we don't need to change the rules.
A couple of notes here. In the states where it has been pushed, it looks like it's not going to succeed in any way, shape, or form. Number two, it's once again, I think, good to default to the wisdom of the founders on this thing. As you pointed out, voting patterns can certainly shift over a number of election cycles. And just think, if you think the people are tired of a handful of states deciding a presidential election, can you imagine the number of visits just to specific swing congressional districts towards the end of a presidential campaign? Yeah, these poor people would be inundated.
Yeah. If you liked, you know, Bush versus Gore 2000 in Florida, get ready for that across the country in like 40 congressional districts across, you know, every 4 years. You know, we would have the elections done by like the following June.
Yep. The founders had it right. Jim, hope springs eternal for a good martini tomorrow, and I'll talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, despite our dreary martinis. And please join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.